A very warm welcome back to the Raw Stories podcast. It's exciting that you're here again, yet another week supporting this great work that we're doing. We appreciate you as our guests. We appreciate you sharing in your circles. Now, if you're here for the first time, you're wondering, what is the Raw Stories podcast? The Raw Stories podcast is a place where we acknowledge where we're coming from by telling stories, followed by lessons. And we have every second week great guests that come and tell us about their experiences, about their journeys, and some lessons that we can take away. Friends, we are especially celebrating this particular week because we have reached 1 year of the Raw Stories podcast. How exciting is that? One whole year. So many of you, thousands of you, have listened from over 44 countries across four continents, and we're incredibly proud and incredibly grateful for your constant support over the last year. Please continue supporting us as we grow, as we tell more stories. Today on the Raw Stories podcast, we have a wonderful guest with us, and her name is Natalia Sierra. You will want to hear her story. You will want to make sure you're taking a cozy walk, you're sitting on a comfy couch, and really listen in, because this one is going to blow your minds. Natalia was raised in a Christian family, and she's so driven by love. She's driven by divine purpose and by her faith. And what is particularly interesting about her journey is, you know, she finished her studies in documentary filmmaking, and she's passionate about human rights, about social justice. And, you know, she's started so many projects in the intersection of art, activism, urban space, social entrepreneurship. We at the Raw Stories podcast find her story incredible, but we're definitely not the only ones, because she has shared her story in the context of Art Basel, the United Nations Agency for Refugees, Swiss National TV and Radio, and so many more places, and touched people while she's been at it. So you can imagine why we're so excited to have her here today. Natalia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It is my absolute honor and pleasure to have you hearing to my story.
Why don't we kick right off, Natalia? Please tell us, I've said, you know, all these wonderful things about your journey. There's so many special things about your story. Why don't you tell us from your own words, what makes Natalia, where does your story begin?
Thank you. Hey, trying to answer that, where does the story begin? I feel I'm 30 years old, and I feel like I've lived a few lifetimes already. I just say that what makes Natalia is her faith and her acceptance that I am not in charge of my life, but that I allow God to be in charge of my life and guide me wherever He wants me to be. And so my life have taken a lot of crazy directions, especially in 2016, my family and I fled Colombia looking for political asylum in Switzerland. And that has been a journey by itself. And I am more than glad to share more about that with you tonight.
Wow, already kicking us off with a really strong, impactful beginning of the journey. So 2016 is about 5 years ago. Your family flees Colombia and comes to Switzerland to look for political asylum. How did that switch feel for you?
The most intense, extreme, yet rich experience we've been through. When I look back, because it really feels like lifetimes ago, I feel that it was as if I had fallen asleep into a nightmare and then woken up into the craziest nightmare ever. And slowly but surely coming back into reality and accepting that this is my life, that this is happening to me, to my family, and that if we don't own it and if we don't find purpose within it, then we just might go nuts. But it's been beautiful. It's been enriching. And if I could have decided to come back again and flee again, I would have do it 1,000 times.
So how did it feel leaving everything familiar behind and coming into a new country to set your roots afresh?
It's something that you're not aware of the consequences until you go through it. You can never imagine how feeling homesick, truly homesick, would feel, how missing your language, your friends, your life that you cultivated and treasured for 25 years in my case. We were not aware of that, and to be honest, we made this decision within 2 months. So it was around May 2016 that my mom brought the idea. She's a human rights lawyer, and because of her work that we were all involved in, it was super dangerous for us to be in Colombia. And so May 2016, she brings the idea of possibly fleeing to Switzerland or elsewhere. And then August 5th, 2016, we find ourselves at Zurich Airport. In this period of 3 months, my brother gets married. We travel together with his wife. We tried saying goodbye to my dad, who stayed in Colombia with his newborn child. You know, packing your life into suitcases, it's something that when I look back, it feels like I was not living that life. I was in some sort of divine trance to get it through. Because when I look back, I was very hopeful of the future, though I had a complete unknown future in front of my eyes.
It's such a strong story. You know, I got goosebumps when you talked about packing your whole life into suitcases and essentially fleeing the place that you've called home. So you arrive in Switzerland, and then what happens?
And then the ordeal started. We arrived to Zurich Airport not knowing anyone, not knowing much about the asylum procedure. And so we went to the police at the airport and said, hi, this is us, and we can't stay back home because we're going to get killed. And so we asylum, and then we were sent to Kreuzlingen, and then there was a shelter, and so we entered this shelter, and a whole new world was opened and unfolded in front of our eyes, with about 100 to 200 refugees from all over the world, right? So a whole new world for us. These images that I have seen in the news of people, you know, crossing the Mediterranean and fleeing and coming to Europe was something that was so far away from my imagination. I've seen it in news, but I've never met a refugee. And out of the blue, I happen to be one refugee myself, and to meet all these wonderful, courageous people and have something so, so, so big in common with these strangers from so many other countries. So it was very powerful from day one.
Hmm. This is so strong, Natalia. You talk about all these different people coming from different backgrounds, all coming into Switzerland to seek political asylum. You're in this place, your circumstances in this moment are similar. Whatever life has thrown at you in the past, in this moment, you're all one and you're all experiencing this. Tell me a little bit more about that. So, you know, what was your daily life like?
One of the most traumatic experiences of my life were those 4 weeks. We arrived there and we were immediately just treated as if we were either criminals or sort of like criminals. The whole setup of this shelter looked like a prison. So you have an indoor patio, you had a big cafeteria area, you had a lot of stairs, and you had long hallways with rooms by the sides. On one side of the building, women with kids would sleep. On the other side, men would sleep. And so we're taken there, we're given a survey that we're filling, and we're like, what is this? It just really felt like, it just felt so surreal. Like, this is not me. I'm not going through this. And it was just really shocking. And so you would sleep in a room with other 8 women. Thank God my mom, Laura, my sister-in-law, and I could sleep in the same room with other 6 or 7 amazing women. And then my brother would be put in another room with other guys. And we were only allowed to leave the place from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And it was full summer. So for me, what was one of the most traumatic parts was, for the first time in my life, I was forbidden to go wherever I wanted to go. I had to be back by 4:30. and the sun was out until 10 p.m. So it was like 4:30 until 10. I remember every night for 3 weeks just being like, why do I have to be trapped here? I don't want to be here. I want to be out. I want to be by the lake. I want to go grab a beer. I just want to be out. Why have I done in my life that my right to get out of this building is being, like, I don't have that right. So that was, I mean, among many other things, I could talk about this for hours, but that sense of being deprived from your right to choose really got me.
You know, it's such a strong story. It's such a strong story. And I think the reason it's important to understand some of this is we live in a country, I mean, we're here in Switzerland, and I get the sense that sometimes people don't really understand what goes on, you know, as soon as someone, you know, sometimes it's made to sound like a choice, like a personal choice where you want to come to Switzerland by all means. And so you find an easy way out, right? And I think the story is much bigger and much stronger than that. And so you say, you know, you're leaving a country where your roots are your family, your friends, and you're entering into Switzerland, you know, seeking political asylum with your family. And all of a sudden you're in this completely different world where you're being treated like a criminal, in a place where you've come to seek safety, basically, which is a human right, right? You just want to, you want to be safe. You want to save your life, your family's life. And then you're in these circumstances. And you say you were there for 4 weeks. How did you manage to get out?
So how the procedure works is in the first few days, you have an interview, a 2-hour, 3-hour interview with a migration officer. And this person asks you, what are you doing here? And then you tell a little bit of the story. You tell where you come from, where you've traveled, what's the situation.
Did you have to do this individually or could you do it as a family?
Individually, because we were all over 18. So we knew from the start that each one of us was going to be, say, judged or accepted individually in the asylum procedure. So after this interview, they basically decide whether you have the chance to seek for asylum. And for many people that we met and encountered in this place, after 3-4 days, they're like, no, they're immediately deported back to their country. And so luckily we were accepted into just like, okay, you have chances to seek for the asylum. And then you know nothing. Literally every day you're just waiting to get a letter that's going to tell you where to go first, where you will be transferred first. I could have been transferred to the French part of Switzerland, to the Italian part of Switzerland, to any town, any big city in Switzerland, no clue. And what we knew is that a maximum within 4 months, that was a maximum we could have stayed at that place. But you want to get out of there after 2 days. I was already like freaking out. And so 4 weeks passed. And then one day we got this letter and they said, okay, you've been assigned to the Canton Zurich. I had no idea what it was. You know, I've had Google Zurich 2 times in my life. It's like, okay, whatever, who knows? Like, right, just get me out of here.
And then you know, I'm so glad that you got that outcome, right? It just gives me chills thinking about people in real danger that are sent back into those circumstances because, you know, someone doesn't believe their story. I think it's really tough. You're so strong, you know, you tell this story from such a place of power. And, you know, I'm very curious as to how that came to being, that you draw so much power from such a traumatic experience.
I have to tell you that I've always known that my life is bigger than me and that we are all, and I say this genuinely and authentically, I feel and I believe we all have a bigger purpose, a bigger divine purpose here. And so for me, fleeing, it felt right. It felt terrifying. It felt terrifying, the uncertainty. But it gave, I felt that it was the right choice. And this is why when my mom asked me, do you want to come? I didn't doubt it. It was like my spirit was speaking out and saying yes, because I knew there was purpose in that. And this is why I can speak so with so much authority over these traumatic experiences that I'm still healing off, because I see God's purpose working clearly through my life, through every circumstance, in the bad situations, in the difficult ones, in the good ones, because there has been beautiful moments, of course. that is where I feel, because I ask myself the same question. I'm like, oh my God, how can I be so cool about this when I say it out loud? But it's God's strength and purpose that drives me to it and recharges me and gives my north and where to go. So I feel more than blessed to have been through what I've been through. I genuinely tell you this.
That's amazing. It's always good to have that spiritual foundation, right? That guiding star, that North Star, that shows us which way to go. So your story takes, you know, your journey takes this path, this route. You go through so many, you know, incredible experiences. You've said both positive and negative, all the same, very strong, very inspiring. But you're doing great work to give back now. So if we look 5 years later, what is some of the work that you're doing in this space?
Yes, again, God had put me in the right places at the right timing, and I've been blessed with so many opportunities. I'm doing my second master's in Switzerland through our scholarship program at the University of the Arts, Zurich University of the Arts. So I have 1 year to go in my second master in transdisciplinary studies, which is basically activism, politics, art, and filmmaking. Through that, I am developing a startup called Power to the People, in which refugees guide city tours based on their unique experiences in the city. I also launched this idea through Capacity, which is an association in Switzerland supporting startups led by people with a migrant or refugee background. I'm a youth leader at a Christian church, and that is my biggest fulfillment, I think, to be able to speak life into younger people. That really, I love that. I'm passionate about that. I've just started a job as a swimming instructor for kids, and I'm loving it. I just love swimming. It was my dream to swim professionally, and I've been blessed to find a coach who had trained me for free for the past 3 years, and now I'm guiding that path. So all of these things are great, and I know they sound very nice and cool, but where am I now, and where I'm most proud of where I'm now, is to see my heart being healed and me accepting the journey, embracing the journey, being at peace, you know, learning how to self-care, like just take care of myself, learning to love my family better, to love my friends.
That's so beautiful and so strong. As you're talking about all the things you're doing, I'm wondering, do you have the same 24 hours in a day that everybody does, or do you get a bonus from somewhere?
I'm exhausted. I have to be very honest with you. I always have trouble with my health because I'm always tired and I have iron deficiency. So this is a big struggle for me because I have the energy in my mind to do so much that I want to do, but my body doesn't keep up with that. So I'm always a bit behind.
Yeah, you're fine. You're in good company with that. I know exactly what you feel. If you have these great ideas and everything you'd like to implement, but you know, at some point your body's like, no, we're not doing that today. I guess it's about embracing yourself and, you know, accepting those moments as well. You talked about an interesting concept of a startup that you're working with, and I'm curious to learn a little bit more about that. So tell us a bit about the startup you're working on. Power to the People is very strong. I love that.
Yes, Power to the People was born 2 years ago. It was born from my experiences in coping with my crazy reality of making sense of home in Switzerland. I started just going out a lot. I was living in shelters. I hated living there. It was very difficult. So I was always out walking, you know, finding nice spots in the city, finding spots that were anchors to me into whom I used to be and whom I wanted to be. So I would go to museums and be like, hey, I actually love art. I actually, in my past life, I used to love museums. So, or I would find a street art, big mural or people graffiti. And I was like, hey, I love that about Bogota. This is also me. And so that grew into me realizing that our engagement into the outside world, into the public space, it is very important into how we deal with our realities. How do we engage with a place that we don't know if we can ever call home because we are so rejected from day zero. And so all of these things were coming up, and I was just fascinated by the idea of what is private, what is public. Can anyone just cope with the reality in the same way that I do? or how does my fellow refugees, do they like going out or not? And also, it was so easy for me to just engage, to just, you know, go to a library and get a library card for free, go to the cinema. I was never going to, I never experienced a racist episode in those contexts. But realizing that my fellow friends living in the shelter with me had completely different experiences in the same places. So all of these brought me to this idea of like city walks. City walks as a tool for education, for activism, for agency, in which both locals, travelers, fellow refugees, just other people come together and experience a walking tour with someone who shares not about landmarks, but about the places that connect them with home or the places where they have felt excluded or whatever the person wants to bring.
I love that a lot. I love it especially because it brings back the power. So I get that sense, right? Like you're taking your power back, you know, like you say, back home in Bogota, you loved, you know, art, street art and all these things. And now you're in this shelter where you're in a completely different world. And it feels like, you know, your power is taken away. So using that as a way to gain your power back and strengthen your position, it's absolutely amazing. So you have to tell me, how did you start telling your story? How did you, you know, get that first platform to start sharing about your journey? And was it scary?
It was 2 months after we have arrived and I was frightened about my reality. And I would meet people in the streets. I would, you know, go out, go to cinema or whatever. And I didn't tell anyone that what was going on in my life. I said I was a student, my mom was a lawyer, she got a job, whatever. And then I started dating a Swiss guy, very nice guy. And so I didn't tell him my real story. I made up a whole story. And then one day we went to the cinema. And as I entered the cinema, I see a guy on the first row. And this guy used to work at Kreuzlingen, at this first shelter. And so he was part of the staff. Movie starts and my heart, it's just like it's gonna come out of my body. I'm like, oh my God, as soon as this movie ends, I'm gonna run out of here and I can't encounter this guy. I'm with my boyfriend if he finds out. Like, it was for me a catastrophe, right? Of course, the movie ends and this guy approaches me directly and he walks toward me with his girlfriend and I'm sweating cold. And for me, that was really, it sounds so silly nowadays, but when I look at I almost had a heart attack. I don't know how I didn't have a heart attack because I was so nervous. And then this guy comes to me and he's like, oh, you're so familiar. I know you from somewhere. And I'm blank, pale, cold through my veins. And I'm like, sorry, I don't know you. I have to go. No, but wait. I know you. I know where I know you from. We met in London in this theater project. I'm like, should I say yes? Should I say no? No, I've never been to London. Sorry. This guy gets so intense that my boyfriend at the time and his girlfriend, they're like looking at him like, could you stop? Like, this is too much. But the guy is in my face. I'm doing this for 5 minutes. He doesn't figure out where he remembered me from. Thank God. We leave the cinema and I break into tears. And it's 2 hours of me just sobbing and crying. And this, my boyfriend is like, what's going on? And I can't even speak. And so that's the moment where I'm like, God, if I don't tell him now, I'm going to have a heart attack next time this happens. And so I go and I'm like, hey, I'm the worst person you have met. I've lied to you. The truth is, the place where you pick me up, that's not my home. I actually live next door in a refugee shelter. Yes, my mom is a lawyer, but hey, we're looking for asylum. It's been like this. And I'm expecting that the guy just pushes me and throws me into the lake. He doesn't. He doesn't. And he just holds my hand. And it's like, it's okay. It's good. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of your mom. It's good. I can't believe it. And that moment, I feel that was a defining moment of me finding acceptance after 2 months of very traumatic situations, circumstances, and just being like, if a Swiss guy accepts me after I've lied in his face for two months, and he's cool about it, and he says I'm a good person, and he's sort of admiring us or proud of us, then you know, subconsciously I see now and I think that was the moment. And then from now on, I was very empowered. Not that he empowered me, but the feeling of being accepted made me realize that I had to own who I was and that there was purpose and light in what I was going through. And yeah, that's where everything started, very early on.
Oh, wow. No, that's an amazing story. I have once again chills just hearing of your experience. Thank you for sharing so openly, right? And, you know, your journey has taken many twists and turns. You faced so many obstacles and you've come out victorious, you know, without romanticizing the struggle that refugees go through. This is very serious. And, you know, it's not every day that everyone draws so much power from it. And that's why I'm especially grateful for your experience and grateful that you're sharing it. If you could look back over the last 5 years, over the last 30 years, you know, what would you say you're most proud of when you look at yourself and you say, hey, Natalia, I am so proud of you for this? What would that be?
I think I'm most proud of myself for facing and dealing with the ugly parts of myself. I've had some traumatic experiences as growing up. And here in Switzerland, everything is stirred up. And I was brought into places that I didn't want to be because of something that happened 25 years ago. And I thank God because I had the courage to say, okay, now it's time to deal with this. Now it's time to solve this. Now it's time to forgive. Now it's time to let go, because I know what awaits me beyond this forgiveness. It's that I'm going to be at peace. And it has been difficult to deal with stuff that happened so long ago, but God has been there, and there's so much healing that has been going on parallel to my refugee journey. And that had empowered me to, you know, to really like let go and forgive in every area of my life, because I find so much peace afterwards. And I feel that I can love better and be better for others when I'm not attached to past wounds.
Mm. That's so important and that's so strong, right? Like just finding that healing. I'm so happy to hear you on this healing journey. I feel like healing is a lifetime journey sometimes, you know, because there are moments when you feel like you've completely healed and then something happens and it triggers you in a certain way and you realize, oh, I still have some work to do there. So I think, you know, the quicker we can accept that it's a journey, the better we are for it. You've shared so many nuggets, Natalia, so many learnings and experiences. If you could summarize two or three lessons that you say from your path, these have been your guiding light, your North Star, what would those be?
Definitely seeing myself as just a human being, that it's limited to time and space and so fragile, and seeing myself in the picture of who God is, that He is almighty, that He was before me, that His plans are better than mine. And so finding myself in that place of I'm fragile, I'm vulnerable, but hey, He's holding me. And whatever I'm here to do, I will do it, even if it's little or big. That's what holds my life throughout it. And then I tell myself this, and I tell this to people from the bottom of my heart: embrace your journey. Embrace it. I know it's hard. I know it's tough. I know many times we're like, why am I going through this? What have I done to deserve this and go through this? And I know it's tough. But know that from every hardship, there is this light that you can let out and let it shine so it can enlighten others' journeys.
I absolutely love that. And I think that is an absolutely beautiful note to end on. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your story, for sharing your journey. Please keep sharing it. I'm so grateful that you have been able to share it on this platform and that it will reach even newer ears and newer people. And, you know, I'm inspired, I'm empowered by you. And I'm so thankful to have met you. I'm thankful to Anya Stando for having introduced us. Your story is incredible, Natalia. You're impressive. Thank you for coming to the podcast today.
Thank you. And thank you for the listeners for taking their walk or their coffee sip. Please know that you're not alone, and I'd love to be back again or to meet you in person and have you in one of our city tours, Fungai.
Absolutely. It would be my absolute pleasure. Keep me posted, please. And to our listeners that have joined us, you know, as Natalia said, thank you for taking us with you on your walk, for having your coffee, for sitting on your couch and, you know, watching the raindrops. We appreciate you. Share this, please, with someone that needs encouragement, that needs motivation. The stories are told so that they can reach as far and wide distances as possible, so we can motivate each other as we go on this journey called life. Thank you for tuning in, and speak to you next time.
This episode was proudly produced by Tom at Tom Lloyd Sounds, and his website is www.tomlloydsounds.com. Thank you, Tom. You're fantastic.